Well, I'm Kirk Heinze for MSU Today, and we're going to learn about the very successful collaboration between two very talented high school students and an MSU professor, a partnership that resulted in some fascinating and award-winning scientific research directly related to climate change. Joining me in the studio are Troy High School students, Kevin Joe and Pepe Liu. Gentlemen, welcome to MSU Today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
And Dr. Grant Gunn, assistant professor in the highly respected and acclaimed Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Sciences at Michigan State University. Grant, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Grant, let's start with you before we learn about the specific research from Kevin and Pepe. Give us some background on how they reached out to you.
So I got an email back in July. I looked back at my records. Back in July from Kevin and Pepe asking about potential projects for the Detroit Science Fair, which is coming up in, I believe it was March 2019. And so we went back and forth, and they had a rough idea of kind of what they wanted to do. They wanted to do something with remote sensing, and they wanted to do something with an environmental problem. And so some of my research is located in the cryosphere, which is anything frozen. It can be lakes, snow, permafrost, or glaciers. And so in this instance...
Or Ted Williams' brain.
Maybe a little bit. And so in this instance, I remembered a case study that a colleague of mine over at Environment Canada did back in 2008, where he used satellite data to look at the equilibrium line altitude in the Devon ice cap. And this was using data that was around early 2000s, or collected in the early 2000s. And so I brought it up to them and said, hey, this might be a really cool project if we use new tech and new methods. And so they're going to describe a little bit of what they did. But I really thought that using something like Google Earth Engine, which is brand new to science, it's been around for a little bit in terms of looking at time lapses, looking at how cities have grown. And there was a Time article back in 2013, I believe, that showcased this. And so people have really been taking it up in the science community as to using Google Earth Engine to do some really impressive research. And so I let them kind of play around with it. I gave them some sample code, but they really took off with it and ran with it and produced a very impressive project.
Well, Kevin, how did you find Dr. Gunn? I mean, he said he got a cold call from you guys.
Yeah, I mean, so Pepe and I first got interested in remote sensing as a subject because we did it in Science Olympiad together. There was an event just called Remote Sensing, and it was specifically about how satellite data could be used to track climate change. So we got interested with the subject in because of doing that event. As a result, we decided to look around and we were saying, oh, well, maybe we want to pursue some sort of science fair project involving remote sensing. So we decided to search around for professors in the nearby area. And we found Dr. Gunn's work to be especially interesting because we wanted, because obviously climate change is a very big issue now, and we wanted to see how climate change could affect various processes around the Earth. So we're thinking, oh, maybe we could look at hurricanes, or maybe we could look at, and in this case, glaciers. And he specializes in, as he mentioned, frozen areas, and specifically remote sensing involving those regions. So we contacted him out of the blue, as he said, and we just brought up the idea of saying, oh, would you mind helping us pursue this type of project? And he was very willing to do so, especially since that we, as you just said, we emailed him directly out of the blue and just said, hey, would you mind helping us do this? So he was very open and willing to help us, and we're especially very grateful for what he has helped us do.
Well, Pepe, you had a trove of data that you had to deal with, and tell our audience, explain a little bit about how Google Earth Engine, that particular methodology, really helped you to analyze that data.
Yeah, so when we initially started the project, we wanted it to have something to do with remote sensing, but also machine learning at the same time. We felt that, well, while we were studying the remote sensing for Science Olympiad, we happened to stumble upon supervised and unsupervised learning that uses computer to classify different regions of maybe parts of the earth or parts of a glacier, etc. But with machine learning in mind, Dr. Gunn, he recommended us to use Google Earth Engine, which is this really powerful tool that allowed us to process hundreds to terabytes of data in a fraction of the time. And this is what really made the research possible because of Google's or the API's amazing processing ability that allows us to sort through so much of the things we need.
So had you guys used or were you familiar with Google Earth Engine before this project?
No, we were not particularly familiar with it.
So after you analyzed all of this data and looked at this snow accumulation and melting and what have you, I mean, what kind of conclusions, I know maybe that they're just at this point hypotheses, but what kind of conclusions or hypotheses did you guys draw about what's happening with that ice cap?
Yeah, so our project is based on tracking the glacier's equilibrium line altitude, nicknamed the ELA. So this ELA is effectively the altitude at which the glacier, there is no net mass change. So above the line, the snow is accumulating, and below it, the snow is melting. So obviously, it's very difficult to track a glacier's net mass change over time, but this ELA is often used as an approximation for that. So our research was specifically designed to try and track this line more effectively compared to other satellite methods. So what we ended up finding is that we looked at data from 2015 to 2018 as one of the main satellite sources we were using. Sentinel-1 began operation in 2014. So we began in its first year of full operation. And so we found that the ELA was rising over the 4 years, which would indicate that there is some sort of increased melting over that time period. However, it's obviously too soon to say any sort of long-term trends, as most of these melting trends occur over several decades. So we just want to add that sort of caveat in there, and we'd like to pursue more research.
Scientists are good about caveats, but I mean that's the scientific method, right?
Yeah.
They processed over, I believe it was over 100 acquisitions, Sentinel-1 acquisitions, and each of those acquisitions is uncompressed about 4 gigabytes. So they're already working with 400 gigabytes worth of data. And how long would you say that your algorithm takes to run?
I mean, not more than a few minutes, which is very impressive, considering that we use more satellites than just Sentinel-1. We also use Landsat-8, and we also used temperature data from MODIS, which is on some satellites in the Earth, in sort of the North American satellite system. So overall, it was even more... it was even more data than would normally be expected if you just considered the main satellite source we used.
Something that would take my computer months to run, they did in minutes with this processing.
We're talking about a very successful scientific research collaboration between Michigan State University and two very talented Troy High School students. With us from Michigan State is Dr. Grant Gunn in the Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Sciences. And from Troy High School, we have Pepe Liu and we have Kevin Joe. Continue our conversation, fellas. Let's talk a little bit about the competition. Now, were you intending to enter this into the Science and Engineering Fair when you started, or is that something you decided along the way?
In the beginning of the project, when Kevin first contacted me or asked me if I wanted to collaborate on this, I think he had in mind that we were eventually going to attend the science fair at Detroit, but we had very little expectations of proceeding onto the International Science Fair. So we're very grateful for that, and we're grateful for this amazing opportunity to further showcase what we've done.
Well, to background our listeners a little bit, the Science and Engineering Fair of Metro Detroit was held in March downtown in Cobo Hall, and you guys won in what was the category of your competition?
Environmental and Earth Sciences.
Well, that makes sense, given what you were doing, right? So you won that category. So tell us about what comes up next. It's pretty exciting. You're going to go to a warmer climate.
Yeah.
Speaking of climate.
Too warm.
Yeah. So in the week of May 13th, we're going down to Phoenix, Arizona to attend the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair, which is one of the most prestigious science fairs in the world. And we qualified it through the Metro Detroit Fair because we were the number one team project in that venue, and they only allow one team project to make it to the international stage. I think they let something like 6 to 8 individual projects go through. But yeah, so we were the number one team project in our region. So, and we are very excited for what we may be able to accomplish and achieve at the international fair.
Well, you've got to keep us posted in terms of how you do, because maybe we'll have you back on being international award winners. But I've got to ask this question because, everybody out there, two talented high school students reaching out to Dr. Gunn at Michigan State University, all of that. Has this shaped a little bit or helped to shape your career plans down the road and what you might do in college?
I always thought, like, during my sophomore or junior year, that I wanted to do some type of research during the summer. So this experience has really enabled me to kind of get a hang of, well, not really get a hang of, but like get into or get a feel of the research field. And yeah, and that has definitely influenced what I wanted to do in the future.
Yeah, just for context, Pepe is a senior and I'm a junior, mm-hmm. So he's already gotten into college. I'm still sort of trying to figure out what to do on that front. But yeah, I would say that doing the project definitely has, at least at the very least, influenced what I have been thinking about doing in the future. I want to be vague because obviously many things can change in the future. But I will say that remote sensing is most certainly a very interesting field to me. And I'd like to thank Dr. Gunn for helping us or become more interested in the topic.
Well, Kevin, that was a great segue to my next question, and this is for Dr. Gunn. But, the Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Sciences, as you well know, Grant, a lot of people have traditional perspectives on what geography and all that sort of a thing is. This conversation highlights some of the amazing new career opportunities or more recent career opportunities. Tell us a little bit about your department and some of the things that your graduates end up doing.
This case study that we have here with Pepe and Kevin really highlights some of the career opportunities that that would be made available to you if, for instance, one of our streams is a Bachelor's of Science in Geomatics. And so people in that program are utilizing computer science, remote sensing data sets, physics to tackle environmental problems. So this research that's been done, it highlights all of those key contributions that you would receive at going to the undergraduate degree here. Geography kind of gets a rap for painting maps and coloring maps,
right.
But in reality, what we're doing here is physics heavy, computer science heavy. We're using really advanced techniques to solve problems, and so coming out with an undergraduate in, Bachelor's of Science, you're looking at potential prospects within the government, within NGOs, looking at environmental problems, whether it's up in the Arctic or, in the Caribbean.
Yeah, and this proliferation of GPS-related technology, satellite data, and those sorts of things. I mean, what a great segue. And the collaboration with other disciplines that allows. So folks in the social sciences working with people in the biological sciences, mm-hmm. for example, and the humanities on some of these projects.
I've always said that geographers, we have a lot of breadth in our topical areas, whereas maybe someone in a physics program has a great amount of depth knowing and understanding physics. But geographers try to bridge the gap in between, the human side, the physics side, to understand problems more of a holistic way.
And I can say this, and you don't have to brag, but the Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Sciences year in and year out is ranked among the top programs of its kind in the United States. I've got to ask this question to conclude the interview because it's been a passion. Russ and I have done a lot of interviews related to climate change. Based on your research, gentlemen, is there a message for folks out there listening with respect to the whole area of climate change, Is global warming an appropriate terminology? I don't want to politicize this, but what would you like to leave the listeners with in terms of what you found relative to climate change?
Climate change is generally considered a very polarizing subject, although I contest that some people would probably say it shouldn't necessarily be. I'll try to stay relatively apolitical, but what I will say is that there is quite a lot of evidence to suggest that at least a portion of climate change is human-related, whether that's 10% or 90%, there's a lot of debate there. But the number one thing that I'd like to say is that, as our research has shown and plans to show in the future, that the effects of the climate change on Earth's natural processes, such as glaciers melting, can be very serious. For one, people always note how the sea level could rise if all of the ice caps melt. But even if you look at how it affects human populations, say if you go down closer to South America and you go to the Andes, where there are sorts of glaciers in the mountains, the issue is that if climate change or if global warming becomes too severe, there are native populations in those areas that, when the glaciers melt too quickly, a huge surge can occur, and those a large amount of water and ice will outflow and hit those native populations in those areas. And there have been several instances of these populations being severely damaged or many people killed in these sorts of avalanches. So there are obviously very global effects to climate change, whether it be human-related or natural, and I think it's in the best interest of humanity to at the very least, track its effects on Earth and find a way to potentially mitigate its effects.
Adding on to that, I feel like climate change, although it is undeniable, but like the debate right now is not whether it exists, but it's between the causes of climate change, whether it's caused by pathogenic or human-related activities, or is caused by natural processes. That's still up to debate. I believe people can have their own opinions on this, but we must also all realize that whether or not it's caused by humans or environmental factors, its effect will apply to both us and the environment. Whether or not we can mitigate climate change or help solve this issue is partly up to us, but also partly up to nature itself.
Dr. Gunn, that was pretty well said, but I'll leave you with the final word.
All right. Well, one of the things I wanted to highlight, and I think that Kevin and Pepe's research highlights it well, is that a changing climate, while we may see 1 degree, 1.5 degrees in equatorial regions, all of that warming is amplified in the Arctic. So you might see quadruple that. And we've already been noticing, when you look at climate anomalies over the last 50 years, is that the Arctic regions are warming at a much higher rate. That has to do with the fact that we're losing snow, which increases decreases the albedo and absorbs more incoming solar radiation. And then that is a positive feedback loop. So what I think this highlights is that we have to continue researching and looking at Arctic regions with a very, fine lens. So these glaciers, sea ice, lake ice are all proxies to this change. And so if we can monitor the frozen world really well, we can also monitor a changing climate.
And if, as your research shows, if you can use a tool like Google Earth Engine to do that, that just makes the scientist's job just a little bit easier.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, again, congratulations. It's been a great pleasure talking about a collaboration between Michigan State University and Troy High School. Troy High School students, Kevin Joe and Pepe Liu. Also with us is Dr. Grant Gunn. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Sciences at Michigan State. Gentlemen, congratulations. Best of luck in Phoenix. And this really is another paradigm example of what we call the land-grant philosophy of Michigan State University, reaching out into the communities and the communities reaching back to Michigan State Universities to, frankly, better the world. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Yep, thank you. Yeah, thank you for having us.